Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me as usual from the studios of CBS Interactive, Fleischmann Hillard's Vice President of Digital Media, Scott Rohde.
Hi, Tim.
And our guest for today, outgoing Audit Bureau boss, Gordon Towle.
Hi, good morning, Tim.
This week, the death of print, sooner than we expected. In TV, 10 announces its new digital channel. Bad boy Ben Cousins wins Wednesday for 7 as they lose bad boy Matt Newton as X Factor host. Hamish and Andy quit Drive Time. We take a look at the election campaigns. No return for Adland Comedy 30 Seconds. Harvey Norman's ads under fire. And Real Living magazine go for personalised covers, just what you wanted for Christmas. But first we turn to Gordon Towle, outgoing CEO of the Audit Bureau of Australia. Now, I've always wanted to ask this, Gordon, where are the bodies buried?
Tim, I couldn't possibly comment. No bodies as such, but I do think there's a lot of debate that's been going on over the last couple of years. The changes in media, which we're all aware of, have driven a lot of pace within the organisation. And without doubt, that needs to continue over the next couple of years to ensure that we're ahead of what's happening in terms of the move to new digital media.
Now, as we record this, we're in your final week. By this time goes up, I think this podcast will actually go up on your final day. It's worth actually maybe just giving context for people who don't really understand. There are two main audit bodies in Australia for print. There's the ABC and there's the CAB. You actually head up them both.
That's absolutely correct. And Australia is unique in being the only country in the world that actually has two audit bureaus. The ABC looks after paid circulation, and the CAB is unpaid distribution. And it's historical. The ABC was set up in 1932, and then some splitters set up in 1956 and called themselves the CAB, and the two organisations have remained separate ever since. That said, yeah. we've you know, certainly tried to bring them closer together. When I went through the rebranding and refocusing of the bureau 18 months, nearly 2 years ago now, we created a third umbrella organisation, which is the ABA, so the Audit Bureau of Australia.
Bureau with an X on the end.
Correct, yeah. And the first thing we did with that was to put in standard rules and guidelines on web traffic audits, which made absolute sense because it doesn't really matter if you're paid circulation or unpaid. You know, the web is the web, and the way that you count web metrics should be the same.
And what was, looking back at sort of 2 years ago when you came on board, what was your agenda? You've talked about the web as one of the things. We'll talk about that in a second as well. Mm. What else was on your list of things to do?
I guess the key thing for us was to modernise both bureau. The pace of change had been quite slow. There was a danger that the organisations could become less relevant to the industry. And there was a glaring omission in the sense that we were not involved with web traffic.
Mm. And now you mentioned the modernising thing. I mean, you know, just practical things from the journalist point of view, someone writing about media. And this sounds terrible, but it was a breakthrough when the stuff started coming through in Excel spreadsheets.
Right.
So there was a long journey to make,
yeah,
wasn't there?
Yeah. And again, to be fair, both boards were prepared to make the investment. We changed the website. We changed the way information is delivered. It went from traditional booklets that were sent out every 3 months to web portals. So people can now access all of that information, circulation or distribution, through the web portal. And obviously, over the last 2 years, we've continued to develop that to a point now where we have a very credible product, which we call the Masthead Report, which allows people to look at both their circulation numbers, but also web traffic numbers.
And this is both newspapers and magazines.
Newspapers and magazines. And conceivably, of course, it can extend out to include readership numbers. So you could have a single snapshot available for advertisers, for media buyers, to show how the brand is performing across all aspects of that brand, whether it be print, online, even exhibitions. And that, I think, is an important step forward, and that needs to continue to be developed.
Now, I should probably sort of declare an interest, because Mumbrella is audited by you guys, so we're clearly very much in the pro-web audit camp, but not everybody is. Where you've met with resistance, what have the reasons been?
There's been a number of factors. I think there has been and continues to be some debate over the metrics that are being audited. My view, and that's very black and white, you know, we can argue to the cows come home about, you know, whether we should have slightly different metrics, what are the most relevant metrics. But the point is, we have metrics which you use every day in every single advertiser and media buyer around the
country. Things like page impressions.
Page impressions and... those metrics, which are commonly used, I mean, everyone knows the Nielsen online reports, and they have currency in the marketplace. Why can't they be audited? There's no reason for that at all. And I think the debate about needing to have better metrics, different metrics, is spurious. We can have what we have today audited, and that's a good starting point.
Now, some
may not be perfect. You know, it's taken, what, 70-odd years to get the print metrics to where they are today. And even they are continuing to undergo change. There's a debate at the moment about issue specific. You know, that debate, the change of the metrics will continue across all media. But we can do it now, and we should do it now. And we've had a very positive response from, you know, a large section of the industry. That said, there has been resistance.
How much of that resistance do you think is because when you audit, you don't allow people to auto-refresh their pages? For people who don't know what auto-refresh is, that's where, whether the viewer likes it or not, every minute or every 5 minutes, the page is reserved and an ad is reserved, so the advertiser is charged again each time. How big a factor do you think that is in people's resistance?
I think it's the major factor. I have no doubt about it. The problem is that for years, people have counted their page impressions in a certain way. The advertisers pay against the numbers, CPMs. And if we switched off auto-refresh overnight, that could have quite a profound impact on traffic numbers to certain sites.
And the difficult thing for you is some of these people are your print members. So you're on a bit of a diplomatic, or have been on a bit of a diplomatic tightrope in keeping people within the, you know, within the camp on print, but moving them on the web.
Look, we've tried to work with other organisations, the IAB obviously, and with our, we've had debates within the organisation with our publisher members, and you know, I think there's some progress being made. There is a legitimate use for auto refresh. There's no doubt about that, and that's one of the things that, you know, has been factored into the discussions.
But why is that?
Well, if there's if you have constantly evolving news, Princess Diana dies, then it's important to get that out as quick as you can, and so for the main news sites, they would want to auto-refresh on that basis to ensure the headline.
In that case, shouldn't it auto-refresh just so... Well, it shouldn't be auto-refresh. It should simply be an occasional refresh when that news happens rather than every, say, minute. Obviously, it's ad-based at the moment. And there's nothing worse in the world than I hate is when I'm reading a page and then what I'm reading disappears whilst it refreshes. You know, that's a major hassle. And I think that they need to... obviously, they're trying to sell as many ads as possible. I think at some point there's going to be a backlash. And Tim, I disagreed with your SMH ad the other day as well.
Which was, we digress slightly, but this was a homepage takeover, the SMH, which I rather liked, actually, but where most of the front page dropped away for a few seconds to reveal an ad and then came back. I found it engaging.
See, I didn't, because I went onto the page to read news and I didn't, and I got served a huge ad and I went, where's my news?
Would you rather pay to see that news, though?
Would they still give me the ad? Yes.
Well, I don't think they would. I don't think they would be able to justify that. If you look at...
If you want to bet yourself by the paper and it's got a wrap around, didn't
it? Look, for instance, at the Australian's iPad app, where...
I'll try not to.
But one of the most common comments from the users is, I will be unsubscribing from this because there are too many ads. Yeah. Now, that's genuine consumer resistance, and I think the Australian will probably change their policy as a result.
So, you know, from that point of view, there is a consumer resistance and understanding. If you pay for it, you don't expect to see so many, you know, ads kind of battering you across the forehead. Going back to the issue of auditing and auto refresh, do you see a way through, Gordon? What's the kind of end point?
Well, I think there is a way through, and we've been making some progress in the discussions. But I do think it's time now for organisations to make the leap, you know, bite the bullet and move it forward, because, you know, there are ways we can allow for auto refresh use, and you know, coming back to I think Scott's point, you know, you can have auto refresh use, but limit its use and limit it to when news is genuinely breaking, or indeed to a percentage of the overall UBs or page impressions or whatever. And if you do that, then we'd have to agree what that percentage is, but if it's less than 5%, so it's not really material, that's a major difference between what the current impact is, which can be quite profound, as we've seen from the tests that have been run on.
I suppose the one thing I sometimes wonder is, I suspect that some of these publishers aren't running on 100% inventory sold. So long as they can sell out most of their inventory on a lower number, I almost wonder whether, in some ways, once they're through the pain, it won't be too bad.
Well, I think that's right. I think that's absolutely right. And I'm sure back in 1932, when newspapers conformed to a set of rules and regulations on how to count print, you know, the print circulations dropped. And in fact, I believe that to be a historical fact. The news circulations did drop because there were tested to a different set of criteria and standards.
And that's happened since as well, when there have been changes in methodology.
And life goes on.
Mm. On print, a couple of things. Firstly, there's a kind of perception that, you know, if you have a gold standard, it's ABC, and then CAB is a bit, you know, a bit easier to game, or however one might portray it. Is that a fair observation?
I wouldn't subscribe to the gold standard suggestion, but there are certainly differences between buying a product and having a product for free. And if I was selling advertising space for a magazine that somebody's paid $5 for, then I'd expect to pay more for that, because you know you're going to an absolutely targeted demographic and audience. You know, if I'm buying Top Gear magazine, it's because I'm passionate about cars and so on. Therefore, I think there's a difference in that sense, that people are handing over their hard-earned money. Therefore, by that very fact, they're going to be more in the demographic you're aiming for.
Now, something you just touched on was one of the other debates that's going on with print at the moment is a greater breakdown against individual editions. So, in other words, for newspapers knowing how Monday's edition did versus Tuesday's versus Wednesday's. Why is there so much resistance in the market to that from the media owners, do you think?
It's a number of things. There is a significant cost associated with it, and that's been true of a number of changes that the publishers have adopted. For example, in recent years, media buyers and advertisers asked for increased audit from twice a year to four times a year, depending on the type of publication. And that was done, but at a significant cost. So to go to issue-specific and to have that reported is going to be a costly exercise. And the question mark in publishers' minds is, where is the benefit? You know, is there really going to be value out of that? And are the advertisers then more likely to spend more money with audited media because they're doing that than otherwise?
And is there a hunch that, as well, that maybe, say, for example, you know, and I don't know this to be true, but Fridays are a really bad sales day for newspapers. So therefore, if there was transparency in the market about that, people wouldn't put any ads in the Friday edition, for instance.
Well, there's a bit of hesitancy around that, and the other factor, of course, is for magazines, the cover is their crown jewels, and you know, the concern about going to issue specific for magazines is that would allow competition to see the success or otherwise of that cover. You know, what covers work and what covers don't work. So again, I think that's one of the factors in terms of their hesitancy in that.
Now you've done 2 years with the ABA. You're about to go off and do a new thing. What's next for you?
Well, I'm going back into running. My background is 30 years running businesses that make things, sell things, do things, and so I'm going back into that. The company is called Global Procurement Services. It's a large Australian-owned business with subsidiaries in China and Melbourne, and so looking at getting back into that sort of environment.
Well, next we talk about whether newspapers really have 12 years left to live. So this is a regular debate, but it came up again this week, the death of newspapers. Digital consultant Ross Dawson says they'll be irrelevant, if not dead, by 2022. Now, it does depend on how you read his predictions. The headline in the press release went rather further than the quotes did. But certainly this idea that that newspapers have a limited time. It's worth mentioning, before you were with the Audit Bureau, you were the boss of Geon, which is a big printing company.
Yep.
Where do you see the future of printed newspapers? Have they got time left yet, do you think?
I think there's a lot of time left. However, yeah, there's a number of factors that are conspiring against print, and one is just that tyranny of supply chain, the fact you have to grow trees, pulp them, ship vast quantities of paper around the world, put ink on the paper, and then deliver that to news. Very costly. And it's done amazingly efficiently. But, you know, I wouldn't write them off anytime soon. What's interesting, here's one example, if you look at it as newspapers and magazines, MasterChef, phenomenally successful program and launched a magazine, first print run, 150,000 copies.
In fact, it's 150,000 plus, wasn't it?
Well,
as well,
absolutely. So. And so I think, you know, people need to be careful about writing anything off anytime soon. There are unique attributes to print. You know, it does sit on a table or a coffee table. It has, you know, there's the touch, there's the feel. It's quite a powerful medium, and it's not going to go away anytime soon. That said, what I do think is that, you know, the successful print titles will be the ones that do have an association with TV and or radio and or online. And if we look at which magazines are doing particularly well at the moment, it is magazines like Better Homes and Gardens, which have done well over the recent years, on the back of an association with a very strong TV program. So I think there's a convergence of media in some ways, but that's sustaining and helping protect print and elsewhere.
Now, Scott, you're a digital stormtrooper, but a former a former tabloid print journalist, though. What do you see the outlook for newspapers?
Look, I think
dead in 12 years' time.
I don't think dead. I just think reevaluated, and I think more and more people will be using the likes of the iPad or whatever the next device is to view their news, you know, on the go, you know, and as you were saying there, George, the actual, you know, shipping and all that kind of stuff, you know, the quicker that newspaper bosses can cut out the middleman of actually printing, I think they'll be happier because costs will go down.
If they can persuade the advertisers to pay the same.
Exactly. And that's going to be the key aspect of it.
And would you agree with that, Gordon?
I would, yeah. I think there's no doubt the change in technology is driving media in all kinds of different directions. I would hesitate, though, to say that, again, I come back to it, you know, I've got no doubt that e-readers are going to play a much more important part going forward, but I think there's still a lot of life left in print. It can be used in different ways, but you know, 12. The pace of change in technology is so extraordinary that you can have, you know, almost ink-based devices which are actually internet-driven. So,
well, next we say goodbye to the kings of drive time radio. So Hamish and Andy are leaving Austereo's drive time slot, although they'll still be doing a weekly show. First, let's hear what Austereo boss Guy Dobson had to say when we asked him about this possibility on the Mumbrella cast a few weeks back.
Now, another announcement you made this week is Hamish and Andy, Caravan of Courage. Yep. Some of their content from that is coming to the UK on Absolute Radio.
Yeah, look, Hamish and Andy, I mean, those boys are phenomenal. We all know that.
You're going to keep them?
We're in negotiations with all our major talent at the moment. So you know, we help those guys get across the line in New Zealand. So they broadcast there. They broadcast in Dubai, of all
Dubai,
weird places.
Dubai 92, I believe.
And now Absolute in London, the old Virgin.
So,
have talent will travel, which is quite remarkable for an Australian radio show.
So not completely unexpected to Oz Stereo, but still something of a blow. I mean, Scott, you were here when we chatted to Guy Dobson, probably only about a month or maybe 5 weeks ago. You sort of got the impression it was in the post.
Things were unchanging, things were in motion. Look, you know, I know it's very, very the guys are very popular. I think it's just a shame that they are going, you know. But onwards and upwards, I think.
I suppose for Oz Stereo, just that massive hole to fill, because it's not,
it's probably the biggest hole in radio to fill.
Well, the thing is, not only as much as anything, because it's syndicated, so it's that national show as well. It's not even like just having to fill it in one city.
No, they're really going to have to pull out some amazing things out of their hat to try and keep to follow this, I'll tell you that.
And the other thing that will be interesting is there must be some really good negotiations going on with some of the other networks who are now looking to keep their talent, because that's quite a big vacancy that has just opened up. But Gordon, what are your radio listening habits?
Well, they're not... they're fairly
not
boring.
Commercial.
They're not commercial. They sadly, they're ABC. Well, I don't know, sadly, but...
ABC is good. Have you tried classic rock yet?
I haven't tried classic rock.
I switched to it about 2 weeks ago and not changed it off.
This is DMG's thing.
Yeah,
you're never more than 10 minutes away from Stairway to Heaven.
Oh, I've heard it twice now. But no, I just like the fact it's got Floyd and it's got, you know, and I've told most of my friends about it, and a lot of them are changing to it as well.
The other thing I do from time to time now, and I'm sure that's happening more and more, is I podcast. Mm.
What are your podcast habits? What do you listen to?
Well, being an ex-POM, of course, I go onto the BBC, which has got an amazing selection of podcasts and some brilliant comedy shows, Friday Night Comedy, The Now Show, Global News, which is a selection of all the news consolidated into 30 minutes, which gives you a brilliant snapshot about what's going on in the world.
Do you know what my favourite, and this is kind of ironic, my favourite BBC podcast is the Dr. Carl Science Phone-In.
It's just
this bizarre thing. He does it for up all night with the BBC. So he sits in his studio at the ABC in Sydney. He talks to London at 4 o'clock in the morning in London about science, just people's questions. And it's, you know, he's just such a good broadcaster. They then upload the podcast, and I listen to it in Sydney. And I just think that's wonderful.
See, I listen to it every week. I get Mark Kermode and Simon Mayo movie podcast from Radio 5 Lives. Mm-hmm. Just brilliant. I mean, it's an hour. I make sure I book out a Saturday, Sunday morning usually, because they do a Friday. I usually grab it the Saturday and then Sunday morning. Just put it on. It's nice to listen to it.
Excellent. Yeah.
Bit of politics next. So, funnily enough, the election became more and more interesting the further we were away from the actual campaign. The run-up to election night was pretty dull.
It's been a bit foobar for all of Australia, to be honest.
It has, but election night itself was quite good fun, and then everything that's followed has been brilliant. Scott, you first. What did you do on election night? How did you watch the
I moved into my new apartment, so the TV was on, but there was a lot of unboxing happening at the same time.
What was your first choice? What network did you
watch? I was on 7 at first, and then went to the ABC, which I think had the best. That was the one that just seemed to be less biased, I suppose.
The ABC rated best as well. They did just over a million averaged across the whole
night. Yeah, look,
I think...
Like many people living in this country, I think we're all a bit disappointed by the outcome. You know, you never want to see a country so divided and so bored by it all, I think is probably the best way I can say it.
Well, Gordon, did you find it boring on the night? What did you watch?
Well, I'm probably a bit more of a tabloid enthusiast, so I watched the panel.
That was 9,
Channel 9,
it?
Yeah. And that was very entertaining. Lots of Biff and...
Yes, lots and lots of Biff. There was... Yeah. Costello was good value,
he was
wasn't
excellent,
he?
Excellent value, yeah.
Yeah, so. I mean, I must admit, because I flicked back and forth between between the few. So of the commercial broadcasters, nine did best. They were just behind the ABC. I suppose the, at times, triviality of it was what disappointed me a bit. So, for instance, Nine had the shooting gallery where, you know, they were, had the kind of the duck shoot with politicians kind
thought
of, you know,
terrible.
Being knocked down.
Yeah.
You know.
I thought that was absolutely terrible.
Yes, I'm sure you, not sure you should be encouraging people to shoot politicians.
Well, that was actually the moment, when that came up, that's the moment I turned over to ABC. I was like, oh, this is just atrocious.
Although my cringe moment for Seven was when they had, quite early in the process, the Sunrise, I think it was Grant Denny, the Sunrise weather presenter, doing a whole sort of... attempted forecast with a sort of, and here in the middle of the country there'll be turbulence for the Liberals, and, you know, just again felt quite sort of cheesy.
But would you agree though, Tim, that if you're coming back to perhaps print for a second, the election coverage was far better in print than it was on TV in terms of the analysis, the in-depth coverage? I think the Australian did an excellent job.
I would come in for the Herald as well, actually. The one piece of coverage that people remember long after the campaign, mainly because it was unfortunately quite prescient, was the Herald did just a single cover of the 15 issues we won't be talking about in the election, but we should be talking about. Yeah. Very much in the style of The Independent in the UK.
To be honest, I think that the coverage in Australia and the newspapers and the TV was terrible.
But better in print, though, you'd agree with that?
Absolutely better in print, but I think still...
So print was better than digital media, Scott?
Yeah. It still is. Hey, look. But was... You know, I think digital is important for the story.
How much of that is the fault of the journalists, and how much is the way the campaigns were being fought? I think both
have to raise their hands in that. When the campaigns, you know, both sides were terrible, you know, the sniping, which I think, you know, it's... You tell kids in school playgrounds not to act like that, and then when you get politicians doing it all the time, it's just ridiculous. And the print journalists and the digital journalists, I don't think they were asking enough hard questions. You know, if this was the UK, and I don't like to do this whole comparison, but...
But you
know,
always do.
I always do. But the fact is, in the UK, because there's so many newspapers, they're fighting for the story, they're fighting for that exclusive. With it, there's no real fight, I find, a lot of the time.
I disagree with you, though. I don't think that... I really don't think the media has been the bad guys in this election.
Look, I'm putting the politicians way above the journalists in this one. Yeah, I'm just saying that I think the journalists missed things in this election. I think the newspapers were too much going for the sensationalism over the hard facts. But yeah, the politicians should be embarrassed by themselves.
Speaking of bad guys, next up we talk bad boys on TV.
Ooh.
Now, in television, Seven had to rush in a new host for The X Factor, which opens next week after the departure for health reasons of Matthew Newton. Meanwhile, another bad boy, Ben Cousins, brought the network just about a 2 million audience on Wednesday nights. And also this week, Ten's new digital channel has launched. There's loads of TV stuff to talk about, and unfortunately not many minutes to talk about it. But firstly, Scott, always a risk for Seven when you bring in somebody troubled like Matt Newton to front the show.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, didn't the judge say that, you know, he was likely to never do anything like that again a few years, and then next thing you know, I think the moment you put somebody like that in your books, you are risking it, and, you know, they're risk...
But the question is, the same thing, they've got a show about Ben Cousins, which does very well.
So you've got I mean, because everybody loves a bad boy. You know, maybe there'll be a Matthew Newton, you know, show soon, and everybody will be like, oh, brilliant, I want to watch that.
I'm not sure he's that loved a character, to be honest.
I don't think so either.
Is Ben Cousins loved?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? I mean, I must admit, you don't immediately strike me as the sort of person who would necessarily sit down with a glass of port to watch the Ben Cousins documentary.
What are you suggesting? You port.
you could prove me wrong though. What did you do? Did you watch the show?
I certainly didn't watch it. And it's a personal thing, but I've got three kids, one of whom's still a teenager, and I don't like the sensationalising of that type of behaviour. I think Ben Cousins is an idiot. You know, he should be portrayed as an idiot. He should not be given the oxygen of publicity to say, isn't it cool to be a drug-taking drunk? I don't think it's right. I don't think it's It should come with warnings, and it should be on after.
You're absolutely spot on, Gordon. Mm-hmm. Absolutely spot on. I suppose it's also, as I've said in this show before, one of the reasons I don't like Underbelly is this whole glamorisation of crime. You know, I think that that's sending the wrong message to people.
Now, as we just as we're about to record this, for the second week running, the news has come in of the launch of a digital channel. As we were about to record this podcast last week, Seven announced the launch of Mate, which was their bloke-focused channel. Ten have moved now, although it doesn't actually launch until next year, with, logically enough, their next digital channel is 11. But amongst the interesting things, firstly, 10 are now going to have a news followed by local news lineup from 6 to 6 and then at 6:30. But to make room for that, Neighbours and The Simpsons are moving to 11. So they're getting serious.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big move. You know, it's obviously trying to drive the traffic there, but also to drive the advertisers there. I know that after this podcast, I'm just going to go out and register 12 as a channel, just in case they try and go for it next. Look, I think it's a good move. You know, if they're up against Seven Mate, and, you know, they're probably... Seven Mate's such a terrible name, sorry. Mm-hmm. And the new 11 logo looks absolutely atrocious. I don't even know what's going on at the moment with the TV channels and this branding themselves. It seems a bit crazy. I think it's going to get people going to... Look, if you've got The Simpsons, people go where The Simpsons are. Let's be honest here. You know, MD doesn't have Foxtel, that's the only place to get it. If it's on 11, that's where people are going to go.
Well, what we'll talk next is David and Goliath in a PR battle. So electronic retailer Kogan has socked Harvey Norman in the face in what's shaping up into a decent little public relations fight.
The big retailers spend big bucks on TV ads like this, and guess who pays for it? You! So now we're having a 20% price hike to pay for this ad. Until midnight Sunday, 22-inch TV with DVD was $349, now inflated to $419 to pay for this ad. 46-inch was $999, now inflated to $1199 to pay for this ad. Plus PDRs, Blu-ray players, and more. But be quick, on Monday we'll be back down to the market-shattering prices you always find online at Kogan.com.au. Kogan, Australia's best value LCD and LED TVs.
So that clip was a spoof ad of it was Kogan's spoof of the Harvey Norman style, "We will shout at you as we announce our latest sale," whilst putting on lots of expensive advertising. I rather like this, Scott, because to me this is just all about the PR. Ad's running a few times, but this is about the PR of a small player taking on a big player. That's in the textbook, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, the good thing is, you know, that being the little guy, you can do this, you can get away with it. And good on them. You know, I haven't used any of their stuff, so, you know, I don't know how good they are. But, you know, I think it's what they've done is the best way forward. I'm not quite sure, obviously, about current affair, as usual, but...
So was it Today Tonight? I think it was Today Tonight.
I thought it was ACA, was it?
They blend together, let's be honest. apparently they have been on both, and with the same reporter, who's now moved from one programme to the other, and obviously taking their contacts book with them. Up next and finally, we'll be talking personalised magazine covers. So a nice stunt by Real Living. Their Christmas edition, the first 10,000 subscribers to that, will be able to have a personalised cover with. They can upload their pictures, they can upload the cover lines. Fortunately, we have a print expert in the room, because this sounds horrifically complicated, but I guess digital printing is one of the things that is going to help magazines survive, Gordon.
Look, there's no doubt that technology is moving very fast in print. It sounds a bit of an opposite, but look, there is an ability now to personalise magazines at a pace that's never been possible before. So you can do quite large print runs. It was always possible to do it in a small print run, but now using very advanced technology, you could do print runs of 10,000, 20,000, and make it absolutely personalised to the individual. And it comes straight off the printer. It's into the binding area. Out of the bindery, it could be wrapped up in plastic, mailed out, and it's all done in a seamless process. So I think we'll see more of it, as we've seen more of that personalization in direct marketing, below-the-line marketing, more of a rifle shot approach, tailored ads. So I think we'll definitely see more of it. How much more, I don't know. This is a Christmas
This is for the Christmas edition, I think people have to almost now start uploading in order to have it in time. The idea being is, you know, perhaps a nice little family Christmas gift. And I suppose that's the thing. Well, it has the novelty factor. You can see why the punters might want to picture them on the cover. Yeah. I guess the question is, as a sort of business proposition, because obviously the costs go up, presumably it's about the personalisation of the advertising is where the opportunity comes.
I think so, yeah. And the incremental cost, not that much now, if you've got the right technology in place, but the hard part is keeping the database fresh and up to date, and that's why this sort of campaign where you're required to register your details, your photograph and everything else, that works quite well. But it's a lot harder when you try and do it outbound.
I suppose what I have come across in the past is publishers who do split runs where they put two different ads in, and then when they're sending their copies back to the advertiser, then they send the relevant one to the advertiser. But that's perhaps for less honourable reasons.
Is that what you used to do, Tim?
No. I knew, particularly when I was in the Middle East. It was not uncommon for publishers to do that sort of thing, though. You know, because it was about naive.
Would you get buy a magazine if it was personalised like that?
Hard to say. I mean, one of the best Christmas presents ever got for my family was being able to personalise Monopoly. So it was, you know, all the things about your family. You know, you put your own, you know, the roads where you'd lived. You know.
You'd have to move around a lot there.
Well, it was family. it was family quirks, like, you know. So for my mother, there was nice cup of tea lane and that sort of thing. it was a great present. But that was all about, you know, digital printing and all of them, you know, all of those things. Exactly. Yes. That is all that we have time for today. Unfortunately, thank you very much to my co-host Scott Rohde and to our guest Gordon Towle. Thank you very much for CBS Interactive for the use of their studios. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle pip.